Welcome to The Stuck Stops Here, a podcast devoted to cycle breakers. We want to celebrate and empower those who have woken up and decided that toxic generational dysfunction can end with you. My name is Tammy Atman, and I hit rock bottom in 2014, and during those moments of despair, I decided change was my only option. Emotional abuse, both covert and overt, is contagious and leaves invisible scars. The next generation deserves better than what we got. Join me and my amazing co-host and producer, LW, as we have raw and real conversations infused with bad words and humor, designed to inspire awareness, acceptance, and strength. We are not therapists and have no clinical training. You are not alone. Healing does not happen in isolation. Together, all of us can break the familial chains of shame, guilt, fear, and blame. Our stuck can stop here. Vera Wilhelmsen is with us today. She was once ill with incurable chronic illness. She fought her way out on her own, realized the root causes, cut off contact with her entire family and all the toxic people in her life, and dove deep into her own trauma to heal. She states on her website, "I was severely ill. Around Christmas 2018, I was preparing to die. I had been bedbound for 3.5 years. No sounds. I cried when I heard cutlery. No light, no appetite, severe headaches, severe IBS for 6 years, often crawling from the bed to the bathroom. I had trouble getting food and water in me. My hygiene and shower routine was non-existent, but I refused to give up. Vera is now living her best life and helping others to do the same. Her dream is to continue healing herself and help other people heal. She emphasizes, I have learned you can save yourself and you can heal yourself. Even though I am not a qualified health professional, I can share my story and the resources I used and be a friend. Welcome, Vera.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I'm excited.
I've checked out all of your YouTube, and you have quite a story. And I am grateful, yeah. Lisa and I are grateful that you are here to share it with us. Can you tell us a little bit about your childhood and, you know, the narcissistic abuse that you endured?
Yeah. Yeah, it's always really hard to, like, explain it or sum it up in like a few sentences, but
I get it. But yeah. I see you have two narcissistic parents, two narcissistic grandparents. Can you tell us a little bit? Was that on both sides of your family?
Yeah, I strongly believe my family is very dysfunctional and narcissistic on both sides, unfortunately. And I do believe that I was the main scapegoat. No one's a winner in this system, but I do feel like I was treated extra badly, like compared to siblings and cousins. So
yeah. Were you scapegoated?
Definitely. It kind of felt like everyone was in on it. I was always the one that did wrong in my home. I was blamed for everything. But when I was with grandparents and aunts and uncles as well, it was like they just didn't like me. They ignored me, never asked me questions. There was, of course, no cuddling. And it was just so cold. And I just felt so unwelcome and unwanted. And if I made some noise, I would get yelled at like so hard. And
did you have siblings?
Yeah, but I won't discuss my siblings because yeah, they're also victims in all of this.
Understood.
But yeah, I'm the oldest.
You're the oldest. Okay.
Yeah.
So what do you think, you know, can you describe in, you know, a couple of scenarios with that you endured narcissistic abuse, any situations that would, you know, sort of help our listeners, you know, understand their own abuse?
Yeah. Yeah, because hearing those specific situations like really helps you have those aha moments.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
One situation came to mind. This one was like especially like it was more like clear abuse, because often it is a lot more subtle, but this is what came to mind right now. They built this new pool in my city. This new, like, with all the slides and everything. And there was this, like, pool there that went around and around and around like a stream. And I was, like, 8 years old. And I couldn't get out of it because the stream was, like, so... the current was so strong. And my mom was like, we're leaving, like, we're leaving now. Get out. And I literally couldn't because I was 8 years old. I could barely swim. And she ended up screaming at me and just grabbing me from the side of the pool and pulling me up like with my arm, and it really hurt, and she was screaming at me and everyone was looking, and this really hit me hard, and I felt so bad and like I had ruined our first time at this new pool. I felt so guilty, and every time I went back there, like with school and stuff, I felt so shameful being in this. Yeah.
It was traumatic.
Yeah, it really was traumatic. And it wasn't until like these past couple of years that I truly acknowledged that this was actually not okay. And it was trauma. This is childhood trauma. So, yeah.
When you're 8 years old, I mean, to need someone's help, to need a parent's help, and just be yelled at, and you know, and as if you're doing something wrong, you were stuck, you couldn't get out, and it was just it must have made you feel so terrible.
Yeah, it was really stressful to be caught in that current, like when you're in a pool and you already feel out of control and like you're kind of in a scary situation with the water and everything,
when you are that frightened as a kid and you get bashed instead of comforted, that leaves pretty deep scars, and the long-term effects of not being able to express fear and you have to suppress it.
It sounds
like such a simple thing. Oh, nobody, you know, I got yanked out of a pool. No. It's much more than that. And I think people run around as adults with all this unhealed trauma and not knowing. I know I was one of them. You know, I had all these dysfunctional behaviors and a defective perspective because I would minimize, you know, what that kind of emotional abuse did to me. And I think a lot of people do. So that's why, you know, some of these little experiences or traumatic experiences are very helpful. Now, as you got older in teenage years, are there other, you know, situations that you can recall that, you know, continued to, you know, traumatize you?
Yeah. When I was going through puberty.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I guess, We all have a lot of, like, if you grew up with narcissistic parents, like, puberty was extra hard. So unnecessary hard. But
right.
I was around 13 years old, and I had some girlfriends over. And my mom asked me in front of my girlfriends, like, I'm going to the store. Do you want me to buy some makeup? remember the other day when you were really frustrated and cried about not having makeup like your classmates have? And I just wanted to die. So and it's subtle humiliation.
And
yeah, humiliation.
And I read about that a lot. What do you think was causing? I know other than the narcissistic personality disorder, but what was it that made her want to humiliate you? Do you think that it's because you were, you know, getting older and independent or pretty or all the above? Any thoughts on that?
All of the above. It was like she wanted me to be a less shiny copy of her. Like shine in ways that would kind of be reflect well on her, but not too well. Look good, but not shine. Like be
that
smart,
needs
but
to
not,
be. Mm. You need to repeat that right now. Look good, but only for her, when it suited her.
Yeah,
and don't outshine.
Look good in the way she. Like in the clothing she picked, like in her style, kind of, but not too good. Do not never outshine your mother.
You know, it's like the Snow White syndrome, you know? You can't be the fairest in the land. You can't be more fair than the evil stepmother or evil mother.
Vera, where are you from? Just so I want our listeners to...
Yeah, I'm from Trondheim in Norway. That's the middle of the country. And it's by the ocean. There's a fjord here. Yeah.
So apparently narcissistic personality disorder has gone global.
Oh, yeah.
It's always been global.
It's always been global.
It's everywhere.
So can you talk a little bit about, your illnesses, and what you were going through during those very troubling 6 years.
Yeah, I actually have had two rounds of illness because of narcissistic abuse. But
can I clarify? Do you believe the emotional abuse you suffered caused these illnesses?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Interesting.
Because they went away when I cut contact and started processing. And the more I processed, the better everything got. My hair got thicker. My nails, my skin got better. Like, it was such a physical... It was so clearly in the physical side of things. My digestion got so much better. Chronic headaches disappeared. Like, yeah... I can probably list things for like 30 minutes.
Oh my God. So, that's unbelievable. And I do think we underestimate what, emotional and verbal abuse does to us physically. I don't think there's the connection is emphasized enough. So back to those, 6 years of debilitating illness. Can you share a little bit with us about that?
Yeah. I'll just quickly go back to like high school first. I first got really sick when I was 16, but it was more like a mental collapse. I just couldn't deal with it anymore. I was so tired of overachieving, trying to earn my parents' approval and love, and I just collapsed. And I had to take high school over one more extra year because I was so tired. And it was only because of the abuse, and this really makes me angry. It was so unnecessary. And I was told that I had anxiety and depression because I put too much pressure on myself or something. It was the therapists and my parents made me blame myself for...
Wait. Therapists? Yeah. Therapists.
I went to therapy because I stopped eating because that was the only protest I could do because nothing I said would make my parents treat me better. And I was kind of the only thing I had left to kind of rebel was to stop eating. So I did, and I got really skinny. And a girlfriend of mine went to like the school nurse and started talking to her, and they put me in therapy. And the school nurse, she was amazing, but the therapists were horrible and didn't see what was happening at all, and just took my parents' side, made me blame myself. So
I'm getting physically ill hearing this.
Yeah, it makes me like nauseous to think about. So they made me take antidepressants. I was given way too much medicine. I felt like they were like trying to numb me down or something. But all I needed was to just be taken out of that abusive environment and just, yeah. All I needed was to just be taken out of that horrible home, and I would have been fine.
It's amazing that they didn't look to your parents. They didn't say, what's going on in this household that's hurting this child?
No. I feel like they never look at well-educated parents twice. Child Protective Services. That's horrible, but I think it's true. Because my family looks really good on the outside. So that made me...
Don't they all?
Yeah, but I feel like it's pretty common knowledge now that ministers abuse their children, and it happens in these quotation mark good homes too. Like, we know that now, but apparently not. Yeah.
I'm shocked.
It really led me to... My mom was really mad at me for having psychological problems, and I wasn't like allowed to be sick. So I'm really impressed by myself from this, but I had the strength to like just stop having problems, like suppressing it all and just
this is incredible. Can you share those pivotal moments, maybe toward the end of your quote unquote sickness, illness, where you started to heal? Can you, you know, share what went on with that? Because I think this is pretty incredible.
Yeah. So right now I'm at like 18, 19 years old. And I was like, okay, the therapists aren't helping me and nothing is changing. So I guess I'll just have to pull myself together. And so I did. And I went to university, and that's when like the real problems started. And I believe it was because I swallowed all my feelings, all my pain, and just, yeah, went back to working really hard. So I started university at 20, and at 23, I fully collapsed, could not lift my head from the pillow. I couldn't even sit in a wheelchair. I was just, it was like that for 3 years. So.
Oh my God. Now, was anyone, did your friends or anyone, you know, supporting you, anything during those 3 years?
Yeah, but I didn't have the words to like explain to them, and I didn't see it clearly yet either. So it was more like I went to all these physical examinations, and my friends were like keeping track of that and stuff, but they didn't really know how.
Well, how would you name it? Yeah. How you can't label it, you know, because narcissistic abuse can often be covert and difficult to explain and show. There's no scars. They're invisible.
Yeah. And it had went so badly in the past with therapists. So it just wasn't an option anymore. And I felt like I was so sensitive, like everyone else was fine with being talked to that way and all the subtle insults and everything. Like everyone else was fine with it. Why did I feel so much pain? And it was so tiring to be around people like that. It just depleted me so much. And I felt so weak and frail, and everything my mom always told me, that I was naive and frail, sensitive, weak. And I just wanted to prove that I wasn't, I guess. But I moved back into my parents when I collapsed, which, looking back, was like the worst thing I could have done. But they were like, yeah, we'll take care of you. And but they didn't, of course. And I was like drowning in that bed, fighting, you know, for my life.
Instinctually, you knew there was something wrong with their behavior, even as young as probably 8 years old when you had that incident in the pool. But it's hard to imagine, and it's hard to believe that your parents would behave like that. So as a kid, to know something's wrong, but it's hard to admit it. Like, how can you possibly verbalize that and admit it and understand? Because everyone would be like, what are you talking about? They're the nicest people, you know. So it, it's a very lonely feeling.
I got that too. I understand. I get it.
Yeah.
So what was the first, you know, aha moments or signs of, you know, hope and healing, you know, when you embarked, when you started and began your healing journey? What were those moments like? What were the realizations you had?
When I was in bed, I watched a lot of YouTube, and I became interested in like self-help and things. And I remember I came across Teal Swan, if you know her.
Yeah, I know exactly who that is. Yeah.
And she like explained projection and things like that really well. And I was like, oh my God, this.
Now she has a book.
Yeah.
She has a book, right? Yeah. Can you tell me about how the book influenced you and the name of the book?
Yeah. So I really enjoyed her videos. They really helped me. And her book, The Completion Process. I kind of knew I had to process my childhood trauma. That's kind of what I realized. And her book, it just goes so deep. I wish all therapists had read this book. She like, you have to like go straight into your trauma and fully feel it and process it. And there are no shortcuts. You just have to do it. But I read this book while I was still living at home. So it was kind of a little early to heal while I was still being stabbed. Kind of like tried to start this healing journey, but I couldn't relax, and I felt so unsafe. And I knew that if I cried or something, like feelings came up, I would upset my mom and would start this whole thing. And so I kind of put it on pause for a while, but I did this. I found this Indian traditional medicine called Ayurveda, and it's very like digestion and physically focused, and it really helped me get some strength back and some appetite back. And that's kind of when my climb started. So I first like got help from the physical side of things. And then after, I felt so much physically better and stronger because I could eat something again. And I started taking walks outside and stuff. And I even started going to some yoga classes. So this was like a huge improvement from being bed bound. And then I started to slowly realize the narcissism thing, because I tried to avoid my parents as much as possible. But there was this one morning where everything just happened. I was going to a yoga class, and I tried to avoid my mom beforehand because I didn't want to be like unsettled and upset when I went to yoga, because I knew it would be hard to like calm down and center again. And she upset me before a yoga class, of course. And I went to that class and I was so upset, and I started crying in yoga class, and I just left the class, and I went home, and I packed a bag, and I just left. She gave me a headache.
So where did you go?
I went to one of my siblings first, and then 2 weeks later, I found an apartment to rent. But it was just so, I had just found this newfound strength and health, you know? And she could influence that just in 2 minutes of talking to her, she could give me a headache. And that's when it really clicked, like, she is making me sick. My father also, of course. But she was the most, like, actively toxic one. He was more like, didn't care about me at all. I don't think I've ever even had true eye contact with him my entire life. So, but anyway, the headache she gave me and the upset she gave me by just talking to her for 2 minutes, it finally, like, clicked. Like, if I ever want good health, I cannot be around this. Like, I didn't yet know I was going to go no contact, but I just knew I couldn't at least live with them. And after I left, I found all of these books, Toxic Parents by Dr. Susan Forward.
I've read that twice.
Yeah, that was really good, all of her books. And that's when I also found all of these other books on narcissism and adult children of narcissists. And I just, okay, after 2 weeks, I actually went back for dinner, and she upset me like so much once again. And I couldn't sleep that night because she just triggered my nervous system so much. And that's when it really sunk in that no contact is the only option for me. If I ever want to have good health and actually, like, live, be myself, make my own decisions. And I had believed my life was over, right? I was bedbound and had gotten the label of chronic fatigue syndrome and it's incurable and all of that. So I had gotten better and I felt like I had this second chance at life, and I was sure as hell not gonna waste it. So it really lit this fire in me, and like, I can't compromise anymore. It's such a waste. Yeah.
That's incredible. Wow, you've worded it, you know, you've worded it beautifully, you know.
Thank
so,
you.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Fantastic.
You know, even though you went back home after being in the hospital and you had that book, Teal Swan?
You
know, it was the beginning of you able to start.
Yeah.
You were able to start seeing what was really happening. It opened your eyes. And that's why, even though you were home, you were starting to be able to break away, which was really, really, like, just emotionally, like, wow, this isn't me. Everything that I thought is really happening, and I see it's happened to other people. And it must have given you such a great feeling of hope.
Oh, yeah. The validation from those books and from, like, finding out this is actually a thing. There's a word for this. This is a pattern, this behavior. And when I read the typical behaviors of a narcissist, I was like, oh my God, I've experienced these 20 behaviors every day of my life. And it's horrible. And I don't have to take this anymore.
Wow.
No, true.
Yeah.
That's why we started this podcast, for that exact reason, so that people would know that they're not alone and they can see that there's a pattern here and other people are going through it. And it kind of gives a name to what's happening.
Oh, yeah. It feels so good to, like, help people connect the dots, because a lot of people find my stuff because of the chronic fatigue syndrome thing, but then they kind of begin thinking about their relationships and are they healthy, and
the relationships with other people as well as the relationship with yourself. You know,
oh, yeah.
You when you get physically abused, you know, you get slapped, you don't slap yourself back. But when you get emotionally abused and told in so many different ways that you're worthless, you continue to self-injure yourself by because then you tell yourself you're useless. So you and it happens all the time. So you injure yourself over and over and over and over and over and over again. That deeply ingrained self-loathing is very hard to heal from. It's possible, as you've proven, but it's hard. Can you tell us a little bit, you know, about your goals, your websites, your coaching? And, you know, we're going to put those all those links in the show notes.
Yeah, I am training to be an Ayurvedic practitioner, but that will take some time. So I'm hoping like to be able to do both, like help people with more the physical side of things, digestion and like holistic health, and also scapegoat child recovery, narcissistic abuse recovery, connecting the dots, just doing a cleanup of your entire life, even if there isn't narcissistic abuse. Like anyone that has chronic health issues probably needs to remove some stuff and bring in better stuff in their life, better relationships or a more aligned career. And
like, amen, Vera.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely. 100% true. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, you have your YouTube channel. Can you, you know, talk about your videos and, you know, what they're about and what you'd like, you know, people to gain from them?
Yeah. My videos are me just being the person I always wanted to be and like I deep down knew I was, but it was so repressed. So now I'm just like putting it all out there and I just make whatever videos I want, but they're always around the themes of finding yourself, getting to know yourself, processing trauma, setting boundaries, Ayurveda, health, and just me doing fun stuff, trying to inspire people to not care so much what other people think. And yeah, filmmaking was actually, it was something that I like reclaimed because I knew at like 10 years old that there was something in filming for me. Like it was just, I just loved it. It was so much fun. And I loved editing. And I actually did put some videos up on YouTube when I was like 16. And of course I didn't get any praise or approval or anything from my parents. I just felt like I had done this shameful, bad thing. So I deleted the channel. And now I'm doing it again, not holding back at all. Just,
Every book I've ever, you know, every book I've ever read, every video, every person, you know, like you that I've spoken to, you know, creative outlet is so important. And people, you know, sort of hold back from that because you might actually get criticized. But if you do it with the intent that, you know, this is just your way of expressing yourself and, you know, being brave enough to take these creative steps to heal and not care what other people think, like you said, it's something that people should explore more. So you're right. It's so great that you're doing the filming and the editing. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you. Sorry.
No, you first. You first. You're the important one right now.
I feel like it really speeds up the recovery if you kind of reclaim some childhood hobby or something that you stopped doing because you were criticized or shamed, and just try doing it again. And yeah, just be true to yourself. And because I believed like I didn't have a personality, when I went no contact, I believed I had missed out on all the childhood development when you like create a personality and find out what you like and dislike. And like, I missed out on all of that, but I actually realized that I had found out the things that I kind of really liked, but I had just stopped doing them. So I just had to pick it back up again and see if I still liked it. And nine out of 10 times I did. So, and you also have to do things you're afraid of to heal. I thought that I would get criticized and people would think that I was, thought I was pretty or something if I wore a pink hair tie. Like, people would be like, who do you think you are? And so I did it even though I felt horrible and scared. And then nothing happened, and suddenly that was part of my comfort zone. So you have to expand your comfort zone step by step. And it's horrible, but you kind of have to reclaim all of these things that were taken away from you. Yeah.
Wow.
That's what I'd say.
Perfectly said.
Yes.
So, Vera, I'm going to retire from podcasting now, and I'll have you take over.
Yeah, sure.
So, Vera, can you share some advice and some, you know, words of wisdom for, you know, listeners who are probably struggling to figure out why things are so challenging and why they feel so spiritually depleted? Do you have any advice as to what they should do, the steps they should take, you know, words of hope?
You will feel better when you're not around people who just try to break your spirit all the time.
Just because they're your parents doesn't mean you have to take emotional abuse. Is that a fair
No. When I like finally realized all of this, it was like I had taken too much shit my entire life, and then I suddenly like became allergic and had zero tolerance for any disrespect or shit. So like, you have to you have to like develop your boundaries, and it is hard, but there are like good books out there on this. I didn't know any of this either, and I didn't know I was even allowed to have boundaries, but you are actually allowed to have like a certain level of expectation for how people treat you, and you never have to compromise. And even if it's family, don't let anyone near you that don't respect you or wish you well, because life is too short, and they will influence your decisions. They will influence your health. They will just waste so much of your life and your potential. Like, you'll be filled up with self-doubt instead of support and love. And that will really influence your decisions. Like, if you want to go to a certain school, or I don't know, do something.
Career paths, you know, you know, life partner choices. Absolutely.
Yeah. They can ruin your career and make you, like my parents tried to make me break up with a really good person. So toxic parents always want you to have a toxic partner that treats you horrible. So you might lose out on your dream career and your dream partner and your dream life. And oh, nothing is worth that.
That is true. That is true.
Yeah. Yeah, the Toxic Parents by Dr. Susan Forward, that book really helped me, because there were a lot of transcripts in there from conversations from therapy with toxic parents. So like the kids, the adult kid for like telling them how their experience of their childhood. And I felt like I had seen all of these different scenarios play out kind of before I did it. And that really helped. And she also had this letter writing recipe in there, which is amazing. And I went no contact with a letter, actually. I blocked everyone like on my phone and from like Facebook and stuff. And then I sent a letter like, we will not be in contact anymore. And that is my decision. And I said something like, you have put me through psychological abuse my entire childhood. And I also have memories of physical abuse. So if you ever even look at me, I will get a restraining order. That's what I said. And I'm so proud of myself for that, because
that's such a hard and painful step to take. It really is.
But they had pushed me to this point, and I was cornered with my health, you know? I had no other choice. So I feel like it might be harder if you're like, your health is good and you are like functioning, but you know that your family or extended family are having a negative impact on your life. Because you kind of don't have to go no contact then. But when they are like destroying your health, you have to. So it's.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Life is too short. Like, yeah, they will take so. The price is too high. That's all I have to say.
It is. And you've been, you know, it's been inspiring the way, not only that you shared your story, but the way you shared it. So thank you for that. And please check Vera out. I have all her links in the show notes. And I think it's, if you are, wherever you are in your healing journey, go see Vera now.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And I just applaud everyone who makes this kind of content, because I wish I had come across something like this 10 years ago.
You and me both.
Yeah. It saves lives. It really does. And yeah.
Well, you keep up there. You keep up that cycle, you know, keep up that cycle breaking work you're doing.
Yeah, you too.
I'm gonna try. I'm definitely gonna try.
Yeah. It's hard work, but it's the best work.
Amen, Vera. How many more times can I say amen, Vera?
Hallelujah. Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful, wonderful day, and thank you.
You too.
You have been listening to The Stuck Stops Here. This is LW Noli. Join us again next time as we continue getting unstuck from generational emotional abuse and breaking free from toxic generational behavior patterns.